The Hard Shoulder on News Talk.
With the all-new Nissan Juke. The coupe crossover by Nissan. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
All right, it's Tuesday here on The Hard Shoulder, and that means that we are going on the couch. We alternate between a mental health story or a physical health, and today it's a great pleasure to welcome to the studio Mr. Rob Hannan, a consultant colorectal, right, that sounds pleasant, surgeon at the Beacon Hospital. And what we're going to talk about is irritable bowel syndrome. Apparently, it is very common. 1 in 7 people could have it. And twice as many women as men are affected by it. Okay. First of all, you're most welcome, Rob. What does a colorectal, like it sounds pretty...
Colorectal surgery is surgery of the large intestine.
Is it your back passage? Are we getting down and dirty straight away?
Correct, yeah. Your back passage is your rectum. And the rest of your large intestine is your colon.
So colo is the colon.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So do you divide it up in terms of the intestine? You could have someone else dealing with your appendix or higher up in your esophagus or whatever it might be?
Yeah, your appendix would be part of your colon. And most surgery now is subspecialized. So
would you do livers or pancreas? No.
So another colleague who specializes in hepatobiliary surgery or esophageal... Hepatobiliary.
All right.
So that's of the liver and the pancreas.
Right.
And another colleague might deal with esophagogastric. So if you had an esophageal cancer. So gone are the days where a general surgeon did everything.
Right.
And it's now much more
specialized. Just tell me now, if you're in a hospital down in Wexford, you know, in the Beacon, I can see you do this level of... because there used to be just a surgeon and a physician back
Correct.
In the county,
yeah.
Physician and the county surgeon. Now, are you actually referred to a tertiary care centre?
Correct, yeah. So there is a national cancer programme. So subspecialty practices developed across the country and patients would be referred into a specialist centre.
Okay. The thing about it is that in reading about IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, it's not cancer.
It's
like
not
you
cancer.
Went straight into the oncology suite with me. But you deal with IBS.
I do, because there's a huge crossover and overlap with the symptoms of IBS. So irritable bowel syndrome, as you said, it's a disorder of bowel function. It's not necessarily a disease process, so it's not going to shorten your life. At the same time, as you said, it's very common and it has a big impact on quality of life. In terms of days off work and so forth.
Okay. So what are the symptoms?
Well, irritable bowel syndrome would be characterized by abdominal pain. So patients or people would have abdominal pain most weeks, say for 2 or 3 months in a row, associated with a change in your bowel habit. And that can be either constipation or diarrhea or both. So it's abdominal pain in association with a change in your bowel habit. As you said, it's very common. About 20% of the population would be affected by it. It is more common in females. The age category would be, for example, much younger than for bowel cancer. So the age incidence would be, say, from 20 to 40.
Younger.
So it affects young people, yeah.
Right. Now, let's talk. You said pain in your tummy. Like, there's lots of pain in your tummy. There could be a kind of ulcer-type pain, an appendix-type pain, a cramp-type pain, like a kind of searing visceral pain, or is it just a tummy ache?
Well, it's an ache which is typically described, and there's a number of different symptoms, but a colicky abdominal pain, a cramping pain associated with bloating, distension, and discomfort in the abdomen. Typically lower abdominal or central abdominal pain would be typical.
And would it come after food? Would it come in the night? Or like, would you have it 24/7?
It's unusual to have it 24/7, and it's unusual to have it at night time or wake people from night time. If that was the case, there might be an alternative diagnosis. But it happens during the day. It's typically related to mealtime. So dietary triggers are very important. So it could come on after a meal or throughout the day. It could also be quite random in its incidence.
Right. Now, you confused me when you said so one of the symptoms could be severe constipation. Yeah. And then you said severe diarrhea. Well, like, I would have thought they were kind of mutually exclusive. Like, if you've got diarrhoea, you won't be constipated.
Correct, yeah. But so there's two categories, or well, there's more than two, but the two broad categories of IBS. So there's constipation predominant IBS, so people would be affected with constipation and also get abdominal pain, but also diarrhoea predominant IBS. So that group of people.
Oh, you could have one or other.
Exactly.
You wouldn't have both.
Or you could have both. You could have alternating constipation and diarrhoea.
Okay, so what has actually gone wrong with your body? What's the actual problem here? Because it seems to be linked to the nervous system.
Well, there's a number of putative or postulated causes. So, as I said, dietary factors are very important. You can get dietary triggers, and it can be very subjective and very individual. So what causes symptoms for one patient mightn't cause symptoms for another patient. You can get, have you ever heard of FODMAPs?
What?
FODMAPs. It's an acronym for fermentable sugars in the...
So you're kind of allergic to the sugars?
You're not allergic to it, but sugars are very common in fruits. So, you know, the sugar content in apples, pears, oranges.
Could spark it off.
They ferment inside your abdomen, causing a lot of gas, bloating and pain. So some people are recommended to go on what we call a low FODMAP diet.
Right.
Okay, now if you
look... Because normally you'd say fruit is good for you, high in fibre and...
Correct, but it sometimes has that side effect that some people can't tolerate that degree of the fermentable sugars. So if you look up FODMAP or low FODMAP diet, you get a list the length of your arm of these sugars.
Things not to... Okay.
So a low FODMAP diet is actually quite difficult to adhere to, so it's not for everybody. But what I recommend for patients is to keep a food diary. So
to see what
over
provokes
a period
it.
Of time, you can work out what are the main triggers and then avoid those triggers. Genetics is important because there's a higher incidence in identical twins. So we don't exactly know what the genetic cause of it is, but it is thought to be. And then other triggers such as anxiety and stress can play an important part in development
right.
of symptoms.
So I'm speaking to Rob Hannan, consultant colorectal surgeon at the Beacon Hospital, about irritable bowel syndrome. So really, when you're constipated, when you have this diarrhea, it's the muscular contraction is actually the bowel syndrome, is it?
Yeah, so pain is usually caused by stretching in the bowel. Your bowel has a slightly different nerve supply to the rest of your body, so you don't feel, for example, heat or touch. But it does have pain perceptors, and it also has stretch and pressure receptors. So if there's a lot of gas in your gut and it stretches, that causes pain.
What about lots of liquids? Is there anything you can do simple to alleviate? Drink lots of water or anything like that?
Well, if you suffer with constipation predominant IBS, then we usually do recommend a high fibre diet and hydration.
Prune juice?
Yeah.
Get it moving?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what are the cures?
Well,
it must be quite hard to diagnose.
It does, and there are criteria for diagnosis. So again, in a young age group, there's criteria called the Rome criteria. So the first protocol is really your GP for diagnosis. So if you had a chat with your general practitioner, he would go through the symptoms. As long as there weren't any red flag symptoms, we talked last year, I think, about the red flag symptoms for bowel cancer. So as long as you weren't displaying any of those symptoms.
That would be blood in your stool and
exactly,
things like that.
Yeah. So your GP can diagnose it. Once you make a diagnosis, then you go on to try and treat it. So if there are dietary triggers, you exclude the dietary triggers. Lifestyle changes sometimes help.
Less stress,
relieving stress.
Exercise, would that be good?
Exercise will help with relieving
stress.
Well,
okay, say someone just still has IBS and it's quite severe. And it's affecting their lifestyle, and they've tried all the dietary and the other things, what do you treat them with?
Well, the other thing which I didn't mention, there's a lot of research at the moment into the bacterial environment of the gut. And we call that the microbiome. So the theory is that there's an imbalance in the bacterial environment, and probiotics are sometimes helpful. So they balance out the bacterial environment of the gut, and sometimes help with symptoms as well. But sometimes it's a question of just trial and error and going through all of the different therapies.
But is there like, what would you prescribe by way of medicines?
Well, there aren't really any medicines.
Right.
It depends on
So therefore, if you got a diagnosis, I'm sorry, Ivan, you've got IBS, is it a life sentence?
No, it's not a life sentence because, as I said, it's not life threatening.
But are you going to have this for the rest of your life? Because if you can give me no pills, doctor.
Yeah, but it tends to have a waxing and waning pattern. So there'll be periods when it's worse than others, and stress might.
And why would
that.
Women suffer more with this?
Well, we don't know that for sure. But
oh, I thought it was twice as common in women.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Maybe they complain more.
No, it's not that. It may be hormonal related. So there's a lot of these mediators which, as I said, genetic, hormonal, environmental, that were.
And is there any particular, like, is it menopausal? Is it like, when you say hormonal, is it like puberty? When would it be?
Well, as I said, it starts in the 20s. So,
which is past puberty, yeah.
And it wouldn't present at the time of the menopause. So if somebody presented later in life, then you'd be concerned about another diagnosis.
Okay, and in terms of referrals, you know, I've been to the doctor, I've had all my stomach problems that's going on, and they don't know what it could be, bacterial, it could be, you know, I know someone who had problems for a year or two, and then it sort of goes away, and it's sort of constant diarrhea and that kind of thing. Are you saying if you go to the Beacon, you'll get a definite diagnosis?
Well, I think, as I said, the first port of call would be your GP.
Yeah.
And your GP would sift out the different symptoms and decide if you should be referred. Apart from cancer, there's other diagnoses which could present with similar symptoms, like inflammatory bowel disease, diverticulitis, those kind of conditions.
Yes, I got diverticulitis myself. Okay. Very unpleasant.
Nasty, yeah.
You know, and I thought I had stomach cancer, and it was very unpleasant.
So did you have?
Yeah,
your...
no, I got bacteria cleared it all. It was antibiotics cleared it up. Yeah.
And did you had your colonoscopy?
Oh, I wouldn't have anything put up me, either that way or the other way. No, I'm sorry. I'd be very squeamish that way.
Okay.
No, okay. The GP said it might be diverticulitis, and it was.
Did you get your invitation for the bowel screening test?
I did, and I did that. Okay. When you're 60, you get that.
Yeah.
When you're old and whacked out and so on. No, that was disgusting, but I did it.
Okay.
But
so
it was non-invasive.
Your GP would decide whether the symptoms warrant referral for colonoscopy, and a lot of the time now, the referral for colonoscopy can be direct, so you don't, you know, it saves you going to see somebody else.
All right. More than you ever wanted to know about irritable bowel syndrome. As you heard, as many as 1 in 5 people suffering from it. My sincere thanks for our on-the-couch session today, Rob Hannan, consultant colorectal surgeon of Beacon Hospital, someone who I suggested you want to keep well clear of in relation to sticking pipes up you and so on. My thanks indeed, Rob. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And that's it from
thanks,
the show
Alan.
This evening. My thanks to the entire team, Mark Simpson, Dan Flanagan, Aisling Moore, Roisin Davis, and Alex Russo. On sound, we had Michael Quilligan and Peter Malloy as our tech team. Off the Ball is up next. I will be back on The Box tonight with Matt at 11 p.m. on Virgin Media One, and back here tomorrow, of course, at 4 p.m. with another edition of The Hard Shoulder. Until then, have a great night, and thanks for listening.